Good morning, everybody. The House State Affairs Committee will come into session. It looks like about 7 minutes after 8. I'd like to welcome everybody who came here today and introduce the House State Affairs Committee again this morning. On my left, we have Representative Pete Peterson, Representative Peggy Wilson. Representative Gruenberg has been excused, and my Vice Chair, Paul Seaton, Representative Paul Seaton, and we have Representative Craig Johnson, Representative Agato, is expected to be here momentarily. He's on the phone with somebody maybe more important than this committee. I don't know. So this morning, our State Affairs Committee will be hearing three different bills on the same subject, and that's the subject of divestment of Alaska's money, which is really our money, in Sudan and by extension the Sudanese province of Darfur. And I really do want to thank the good folks up in Anchorage who came into my office and made me more aware of Darfur situation than I was before. And I had agreed to sponsor a bill, which I did last year, and joined in the bill last year, Representative Guerra. And again, that's why I sponsored my bill last year, why I'm sponsoring it another one of my bills this year. And it's why Representative Guerra is sponsoring his bill this year, and why Governor Sarah Palin is sponsoring her bill this year to continue her work to stop the genocide as best she can in Darfur. We all need to work together to get this thing done. I'll be asking my staffer, Dirk Moffitt, to come forward and explain HB 5, which is my bill, followed by Representative Guerra to talk about his HB 45, and then we'll be asking Governor Palin's staff to come forward and talk about her her governor's bill, which is HB 92. However, we won't be hearing public testimony today on any of the divestment bills. All three of these bills will be held in committee today. Our state affairs committee will then hear these bills, I can assure you, as quickly as possible, and I'm hoping within the next week or so. At that time, we'll take public testimony and then hopefully pass out one divestment bill, you know, at that time. And it's my plan to use the governor's bill as the vehicle after incorporating what might be appropriate from the other two divestment bills into her bill. And with that, again, thank you for being here today. It's a very important topic. And with my staffer, Dirk Moffitt, please come forward. And I'd also like to welcome Representative Gatto, who just arrived.
For record, my name is Dirk Moffitt, staff to Representative Bob Lynn, Honorable Chair, all members of State Affairs Committee. Thank you for hearing HB 5, divest investments in Sudan.
You move the microphone forward just a little bit.
Sure.
Your boss is hard of hearing.
You don't need to tell me that.
You are hard of hearing sometimes, too.
I'm sorry, that Representative Bob Lynn, what was that? On December 31st, 2007, President Bush signed into law U.S. Senate Bill S-2271, the Sudan Accountability Divestment Act, and it became public law 110-174. In Section 3 of the Public Law 110-74, the U.S. government gives support and authority to the state and local governments to divest investments in Sudan. In Section 7 of the same law, the U.S. government encourages other countries to adopt similar divestment measures to stop Sudan from committing genocide and oppressing its people. This is the first time in history that the United States government has passed a law recognizing genocide while it's still occurring. In Sudan, the situation is dire. More than 400,000 people have been killed. An additional 2.5 million have been forced from their homes. And untold thousands of women and children have been raped and abducted since Sudan began sponsoring attacks on innocent civilians in Darfur. Alaska should not invest money in Darfur or in Sudan until the Sudanese government ends its policy of genocide. HB 5 mandates targeted divestment and prohibits future divestment of the state-managed PFD pension fund and targeted companies that do business in Sudan. The overall objective of this legislation is to pressure Sudan economically until it ends its genocide in Darfur. The state of Alaska can do this with slim to no impact on our funds manager's wise investment mandate to invest principal while maximizing total return. Alaska has very little invested in Sudan, and it's important to note that none of the targeted companies in Sudan are American. U.S. Senator Sam Brownback said, we've said often and never again and taken up the pledge of not on our watch. We also need to take up the pledge not on our dime. To date, 27 states already divest assets from companies doing business with the government of Sudan. Alaska is the 49th state to join the union. It should not be the last to say no to genocide not on our dime.
Thank you very much. Any brief questions for Dirk Moffitt? Representative Gatto.
Mr. Moffitt, how do we know when genocide is ended? And do we really mean ended or reduced by 80%? Or do we really mean ended? Because I'm not sure we'll ever know that it's ended, or if it's even ended in Connecticut. We just don't, we'll never know. So
through the chair, Representative Gatto, I'm not aware of any genocide occurring in Connecticut, but the genocide was declared by the U.S. government, and our bill states that once the U.S. government says everything's okay in Darfur, then we can stop our boycott.
Any other questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Is there anything in this bill, since it's related strictly to Sudan and strictly to a genocide that has been declared by the United States government, that would give administrative authority for other similar divestments without a declaration by the U.S. government of genocide in a country or without action by the legislature? Is there any interpretation that you as a sponsor see from this that would ripple out administratively so that an administration would feel that they had authority or required to do a similar thing under conditions that weren't where it was a genocide declared by the United States government?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, do you mean that like the governor on her own could come up and say that something's happening someplace else and we're going to stop divesting in that without the U.S. government declaring there's a genocide? Or
Mr. Chairman, what I'm trying to do is find out if there if you as a sponsor are confident that the way that the bill is written, an outside party could not come to the administration or sue the administration using this as the basis and say that there was a that not the United States, let's say the UN or let's say the Secretary of State or some non-full United States government identifying a situation of genocide and could use that as the basis for saying that the state of Alaska has to act and divest from that other situation, not from Sudan.
Right.
I'm just wanting to make sure that we have it clear on the public record what the intent and what the scope of this bill is and what, if there are other implications.
I might jump in here. This is strictly for the government of Sudan. If something similar would happen in another nation someplace, that would not, nothing in this bill would apply to that. And if the United States or any other group were to, in fact, declare a genocide in some other nation, et cetera, then that would be entirely separate matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To be considered on its own.
And so your feeling is that the way that the bill is set out, that any other action for another country, even if there was genocide declared by the United States, would have to come back before the legislature for the legislature to establish the divestment. Is that correct?
I believe there's nothing in this bill, Representative Seaton, that states Sudan or any other nation.
Thank you, Mr.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's my understanding as well, that this is entirely focused on Sudan and focused on targeted companies that do business in Sudan. Not every company that does business in Sudan would be targeted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Representative Guerra, are you prepared to come forward? Oh, I beg your pardon. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I thought you were in sick there.
I was beginning to think I was myself. On page two, it's in terms of looking at identifying companies and investment, it says the board shall prepare and update a quarterly, on a quarterly basis, a companies list. Is there any way that this committee could get a copy of that list in advance so we could see what companies we're dealing with when we're looking at this investment? If the board's going to have to do it, I think it would be something that we should have a chance to look at as well.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'll endeavor to get that for you.
Thank you. Maybe I am in Sitka, Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I appreciate the volunteer of refreshments for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that his bill not be heard until such time as those
refreshments are delivered. Arrive. That sounds good to me.
I know I saw him.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And I have a question. It says, on page two, line 19, actually under B, which is line 18, it says the company may not be included in the scrutinized companies if, and then it goes down into to page or line 21, consumer goods that do not include oil-related activities, mineral extraction activities, or power production activities. We'll wonder if it's guns. If they had, something to promote more of the same thing that's going on, the way it's worded here, then they would be exempt? I'm asking that question. I don't know.
Well, I would, and Mr. Mavic can help me on this. The whole idea of this is not to punish the people we're trying to help. And, humanitarian goods, food, clothing, this type of thing, we would not want to stop that. Like guns or anything like that would be in that category. But could you elucidate on that?
I would like somebody to check into that a little bit more so that we would.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the part about guns, what was that?
Well, if they're trying to get into the country, more things to continue with the genocide. Wouldn't we want to not promote that?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the only companies that wouldn't be targeted would be companies that provide services like gas stations for the people of Sudan, service stations. What it should be targeting is the companies that provide the major money that's being used to instigate the Sudan and haven't done anything to try to stop the government of Sudan from carrying on their genocide. So I do believe that military material is something that we don't want going into Sudan.
And so is that stated somewhere in the bill?
I could find what section you need on that question and get it to you at a later date. Off the top of my head, I can't think where it's at.
That'd be fine.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is information in the background that tells us what companies are that are currently held by the permanent fund that are companies that would be divested if this bill was passed. And we can probably find it for you. I know I have it right here.
Mr. Chairman, could you point that out to me? Because I would certainly like to see that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, there's a legislative research report 09.109, January 23rd, 2009, on page 4. it at least identifies the Alaska Permanent, there's a chart, Alaska Permanent Fund and other state stock holdings subject to divestment. And that's about a, about 3/8 of an inch into the packet.
There's table two.
From the front of the packet.
I'll find it.
Yes, table two.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Moffitt. Representative Guerra, are you prepared to jump in here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to present this issue to you. I think I'll just try and fill in some of the things that maybe Mr. Moffitt didn't address. Representative Wilson's question is a good one. Just for starters, Representative Lynn and I have talked about the bill, and we frankly want one of these bills to move forward. We don't care which one it is, and it seems right now that with the Department of Revenue working on this and supportive this year, it's fine for the governor's bill to move ahead. And I think, in fact, we're going to take a look at the governor's bill. It just got read across yesterday to make sure it says what the commissioner said it said, and we spoke to him about it, and I'm fine with his approach. It's very similar to the approach of Representative Lynn's and mine. If we have any comments on it, we'll let you know for sure, but we're all on the same page. And Representative Wilson's question was whether or not military supplies, whether companies that send military supplies to the Sudanese government, whether we could invest in them. We can't. There's a specific exemption in the bill that says if you're a company that is involved in the supply of military equipment to the Sudanese government, the fund is not allowed to invest in those companies. So it's military supplies. It's mineral extraction activities because through the Sudanese government's royalty system, I mean, that's basically where they get their military money from, is their oil extraction activities, the mineral extraction activities. And so the goal is to hit those companies that are as closely related as possible to the military effort in Sudan, but not, as Mr. Moffitt said, companies that are there to run gas stations, grocery stores, or do things in the southern part of Sudan that are beneficial to the people of Darfur. So that's in the bill. It's in Representative Lynn's bill, and I believe it'll be in the governor's bill, too. Representative Johnson, you wanted the list the permanent fund would use. Representative Seaton's right. The companies that that would be impacted by this bill are listed in the legislative research report. It's less than 0.1% of the permanent fund's holdings. The best that we can tell so far, the retirement board doesn't invest in any of these companies already, and they've been sympathetic to this effort all along. It's the permanent fund that that has disagreed with us so far. But we don't have the list because the bill requires that the permanent fund create the list.
Right.
And what they can do if they want is they can just borrow a third-party list from one of the organizations that the other states are using right now. There are 30 other states that have divested from or that are in the process of divesting from Sudan right now. So it's up to them. They can create a list on their own that complies with the bill, or they can borrow a third-party list from somebody who's already done it if that's easier for them. You know, one of the questions might be, is the genocide still going on? And Representative Gatto raised that it is, and it's going on in a different way. It started out as a murder campaign, and over 200,000, probably over 400,000 people have been killed so far. It's now more of a displacement campaign. There's a land grab in southern Sudan, and so the Sudanese government is closely allied with some of the paramilitary groups, and not only are they brutal, but they're also displacing people from their land and putting them into concentration camps right now in Sudan, where people are dying because the concentration camps are not well funded. They're not intended to be well funded. They're not intended to be humanitarian. And the UN's response has been to try and slow down the genocide or stop it. But the way the UN works is they only go into a country with the country's consent. So the UN had authorized somewhere in excess, I think, of 20,000 troops. The Sudanese government has said, no, we're only going to allow you to send half of that. And so there's a very ineffective UN peacekeeping force in Sudan right now. For a year now, the retirement board, from what we can tell, and the Department of Revenue, again, they haven't really resisted this effort. It's the permanent fund so far. We've tried to work with the permanent fund to come up with a way to say, what's the cheapest way you can divest? What's the least burdensome way we can ask you to divest? they have just taken the position that they don't believe in divestment. So they haven't been easy to work with. The easier way to work, therefore, is through the Department of Revenue. That's another reason why it's good to have the Department of Revenue on board on this. So they have developed, I think, a couple wrinkles to our bill that will make it easier to work with the permanent fund, I think. And I'm eager to hear them sort of lay that out as they come forward. But as they presented it to Representative Lynn and I, it seemed appropriate. So we just have to look at the wording.
If I may point, that was last year, and I haven't had a chance to talk to permanent fund people themselves. This session or doing an interim to follow up on this. I did send a letter to Mr. Burns after the numerous special sessions, I think it was, asking for any suggestions he might have to make this work out. I've not yet received an answer. They probably don't have an answer to that today. So let's turn over a new leaf, start a new chapter, and just go from the get-go. I don't care what happened yesterday. I care what happens tomorrow.
I agree. If the permanent fund comes forward and says they agree, I think that'll make it a lot easier. But short of that, we at least have the Department of Revenue with the investment expertise to talk about how they would set up a divestment program, and we'll hear from them. You know, the questions we've heard, if you're going to target investments in companies that support the Sudanese government, why not target this whole other list of investments, right? And Representative Lynn and I have said many of those other areas are debatable. Some aren't, but the Sudanese situation, that's genocide, and we draw the line at genocide. There are problems, I suppose, that people could point out with, let's say, divesting from companies doing business in China. There's a debate whether China is a productive member of the international community or not. There are also problems in terms of feasibility. With Sudan, Congress has already banned United States companies from operating there. So we don't have to worry about divesting from any American companies and what that impact might be on American jobs or the American economy. American companies specifically cannot invest or operate in Sudan.
And so, as we know, the Congress has called it genocide. President Bush signed it. When President Obama was in the Congress, he voted for it. So we have basically two presidents who thought it was okay, plus the Congress, to call it genocide.
And I think every member of Congress. So I think it was unanimous, and the two presidents, right?
It's bipartisan.
The companies are, it's a very small number of companies, a very manageable number of companies. You don't have to ask fund managers or investors to look through a slew of 10 billion companies every single day. There are a small handful of these companies operating in Sudan. They're oil-related. They're mineral extraction-related. And so it's a small number of companies. Congress has already set a policy specifically, and Congress has already essentially encouraged the states to move ahead with divestment, and 30 states have. So both from a humanitarian standpoint, a policy standpoint, and really also a feasibility standpoint, it works very well with in terms of divesting from Sudan. The discussion, I think, will be much broader and much more difficult if you expanded it to some of the other areas. So I can certainly answer any questions, but I just wanted to let you know the feasibility part is not the most important part to me, and it's not the most important part to Representative Lynn. I think it's the genocide part, but we also wanted you to know there's also a feasibility aspect that limiting it to the Sudanese genocide makes sense on.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Is your view of the quarterly report after an initial divestment would simply be a letter, or does this mean that there has to be a search through all the stocks to make sure, and stock funds on a quarterly basis, or is it simply, I mean, would it suffice once they've initially done the divestment if there have been no other other companies identified through this whole network of Sudan divestment, that a letter was sent that says we have not invested in any of the stocks that have been identified in listing those stocks. Would that be adequate, or is this going to have to be a search through each one of the funds each quarter?
I think your instinct is right, Representative Seaton. The quarterly report can be a very short letter. We weren't invested in any companies doing business in Sudan, and we're still not invested in any companies doing business in Sudan. We're giving the permanent fund and the retirement board an exemption for funds they don't really manage. They really have no control when they hire a fund manager who manages sort of a pool of funds, passively invests, you know, a mutual fund, for example. We're not going to say that you can't own a mutual fund that might own one of these companies, because they really can't control that. But we are going to say, when it comes to what the bill says, direct investments in a particular company, those are the investments we're not going to let you engage in, and we're going to say periodically review your portfolio to make sure you're still not engaged in them. It could be a really short letter, though.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Gatto.
Yeah. Mr. Chair. Representative Guerra, our packet is so thick with information on the Sudan Divestment Task Force, and it relates to an overview of state, cities, university companies, and private pensions currently working on Sudan divestment. And there's a lot of detail in here. Is there a policy that's included in the bill that says we adopt the policy of the Sudan Divestment Task Force? And I didn't see it. And if not, would that have been too complicated or too broad? Or because that is, I mean, the work seems like the work has been done.
Yeah. It's a good point, and frankly, Representative Lynn was right. I mean, the bill came to us from the activist community, right? And the Sudan Divestment Task Force, SavedOur4.org, those groups have done the yeoman's work on this and brought it to us. If you look at page 2 of my bill, and I think it's the same as Representative Lynn's bill, and we're working together on this despite the anomaly that there are two separate bills. In determining which companies we're not going to let you invest in, page 2 says you can come up with your own list, or frankly you can rely on a third-party list like what you just mentioned. You don't have to plow new ground to do this. And so you can rely on a scrutinized companies list generated and updated by another entity the board determines has suitable expertise. And that's the whole goal of that section, is to say, look, the divestment task force is out there. You can rely on their work, or if for some reason you're suspect about it, come up with your own or come up with another third party. But I haven't heard any reason to be suspect about the work that the organization's doing.
Again, Mr. Chair. I'm just a little curious as I go through it. It's state by state by state. University by university, there's been a lot of work done on this, and I still have this concern that I didn't see that said, here are the top 20 worst offenders. Get these guys, and you're good as home. You're 80% home, not 99, but 80, with the top worst offenders, right. And list them. The trouble I have is I don't know how to list them. If I own a mutual fund and they own a stock which has associates, which has a small building in a town in Darfur, then they're on the list, I guess. And they may be one of the top worst offenders because they produce ammunition for genocide. I don't know. It's just impossible for me to come up with a way to enforce what we want to do, divest from Darfur, without saying everything we own is no longer available for investment in the world, because somehow it's going to be connected to everywhere else. That's the problem I have, and I'm not sure I can't resolve it in my head, and I'm just looking for a way to resolve it here if somebody has figured out how.
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, the list is actually much smaller. I guess conceivably, let's say Colgate-Palmolive could have some contract that has a contract with another company that has a contract with one of the oil extraction companies doing business in Sudan. We're not targeting them. We're targeting the ones that do that direct work in Sudan. And so that gets rid of all of the companies that contract with these companies. It's only foreign countries. It's in large part Chinese mineral extraction companies, Sinopec, China National Gas Company. You know, this is an aside, it raised a concern when Sinopec filed their AGEA bid, whether or not they would have been targeted, frankly, by the United States legislation on the subject. But I think we could probably find the list for you. I mean, the Sudan Task Force, I think, has a list. It's companies like China National Petroleum, Sinopec. There was a company, Weatherell International, that was on the list when I first started doing this work, but they've since divested and donated their mineral extraction equipment, the stuff that's relevant to relief efforts in the country, and they've been pressured to leave and done the appropriate thing. The list is not phenomenally long, and we'll try and find it for you, Representative Gatto.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton? Well, I beg you. Were you first?
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
Okay. I don't want to choose between two members, but I'll choose the lady. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I understand what the purpose of this bill is, and I would be for the purpose of this bill. However, we see things happen all the time in business where businesses try to get, if they can't do something this way, then they'll say, aha, if that's what the law says, then I'm going to do it this way so that I can do it legally. And we've seen it. I've seen it in processors in this state that haven't paid people that have come in and worked, and so they leave so that they don't have to pay them, and then we have people here that didn't get paid, and so we decide, oh, we're not going to let that person come in again. Well, all they did is just they dissolve one LLC and make another name and come in as another name. So I know how things happen in reality, and this sounds really good and everything, but I don't think that we can stop some of that stuff because they're going to get around it and do it anyway. And that's what will happen. If they can't do it under this company, well, then they'll just buy out another company and fool us for a long time until we find out, and then they'll do something else. So in reality, I don't quite understand why Congress didn't do it. And it didn't get done in Washington, D.C., so that we don't have to go each state having their own rules and regulations. Anyway, that's where I'm coming from. I think that in reality, it won't work, but the reason is a good reason.
Through the chair, I think those are fair points. I mean, it's like a fraud statute. You know that you want to stop fraud, but you know that people are going to, we're not going to catch everybody, right? And I bet you there are going to be circumstances where some company probably has some way of having a tangential investment or even a more direct investment in a company that does business there, and we won't know about it. But the two concerns you raised, first the side concern, most of the states that are doing this, I bet you are relying on very similar lists. You know, nobody's hiring a huge staff of people to monitor which companies are doing business there. And we don't want them to do that, and because we don't want to make this an incredibly expensive thing for them. So, and by doing that, I mean, probably that's not perfect. You're right. But you don't, when you can act on something that might have an impact, I think you don't stop from acting just because you can't stop all the bad things in the category of things you're looking at, right? You can't fix everything all the time. And I don't want to overstate this. By passing this bill, we're not going to stop the genocide in Darfur, right? We might have some impact on with all the states together doing this, forcing some of the companies out of there that are helping the Sudanese government, and that would be a good thing. We might not. I think with all the states acting together, we might. But the other important thing is we don't need to make money off of these companies. This is less than 0.1% of the permanent fund's holdings. They can find other investments that are very likely going to be very similar in terms of a benefit to the public. You know, it's not like the permanent fund only invests in four companies. They invest in a ton of companies. And by taking this very small segment of their portfolio out, they're going to be hard-pressed to say that they're not going to be able to make just as much money with this tiny segment put into some sort of index fund somewhere or some other fund that they deem appropriate. I mean, they're well diversified, and they'll still be well diversified. So, it tells our people, the people in this state, that we don't want to make money off of a genocide. We don't want to make money that's tainted. That should comfort us. Then it also might have the other tangential effect of putting some pressure on some of these other companies. If one state did it, if one retirement board did it, probably wouldn't have very much effect. And it's sort of like You know, there are many things in the world that only happen because everybody does it and stands together. And you can't say that any one person really did it. So.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The legislative research report that came out that everyone was, it's in here and it's also on our desk this morning. On page four of that report.
Representative Wilson, I now have a bunch of research reports. We've done so many over the last couple of years. Which one is it?
This one was dated January 27th, 2009, so it's pretty up to date.
27th.
And I'm sorry, not on page four, but on page five, the last page, down in the bottom, under seven and eight, are we going to have the permanent fund division come and testify?
Yes.
Okay. Because there are concerns that they do have, and those are legitimate concerns, and so I would just save some of my questions for further than they
have. In fact, Mr. Burns is with us in the audience now, and he may have something to say, and yes, they will be part of whatever we do here.
That's fair enough, and that's why it's useful to have the Department of Revenue on board and the Governor's Administration on board. They can help, too.
To sort this out. Yeah. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the title of the bill, we have the retirement systems, the state supplemental annuity plan, which I presume is SBS, commonly referred to, and the deferred comp plan. And at least the defined contribution section of the retirement plan, SBS and deferred comp, provide simply a menu of funds or managers. They do not allow direct investment of in anything. So with the list of managers from SBS or from deferred comp or from the defined contribution plan, is there any fund or any of the investment options such as Brandeis International Fund or anything else that under this bill would be required to make findings or divest? I mean, I think we're opting all of those out, but they're in the title. And so I want to know if each one of those is going to have to make a quarterly report, even though they have no direct investments, and I'd like your opinion on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. I don't think there's any language in the bill that would require that, but I'm going to take a double check now because you're right, it's in the title. We're not regulating mutual funds or investments in mutual funds. So you're right, I don't think there's any investment that any of our state employees can make that would be in a company that does business in Sudan. The mutual funds are exempted. We're not saying you can't invest in a mutual fund because the mutual fund manager might conceivably invest in a prohibited company. But I'll take a look at the language of the bill to make sure that we don't put any burden on those folks. I suppose there's and I've never seen this in our menu of options for the things we can invest in. I suppose there might be a fund out there that's invest in China. And that might cause me a concern, but that probably wouldn't even be prohibited under the bill either. But I don't think there's an invest in China fund.
Thank you. Well, in all of those, Brandeis International Equity Fund is an available option. And so I guess what I'm wanting to find out is whether the structure of the bill is including these options that do not allow any direct investment, that are only fund managers, and whether we're putting a burden on those systems if there's a provision in the bill that automatically exempts every single option that's available and that can be proposed in those systems. So you can come back later after we analyze that, but I want to get that get that answer in the governor's bill as well.
Yeah, there's not, Representative Seaton, and but I'll make 100% sure. It's just it really bans the boards of the two big entities from directly investing in corporations that do business in Sudan. So it doesn't affect mutual funds at all. But I'll make 100% sure.
Okay, thank you. And
Thank you very much.
Another question.
Oh, another question. Oh, go ahead.
Because mine's different.
My other question was the same as I had before, and that is, I just want to get it on the record what the sponsors intend to this legislation. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because we had a situation in which some people were calling the situation in Myanmar, Burma, a similar situation, and I want to know whether individual legislators or whether third parties could use this as a legal basis for trying to administratively force the application of this provision to, without coming back to the legislature for another bill specific on those situations.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. The bill is completely specific that it only affects investments in Sudan, and then of those investments in Sudan, only the targeted ones, the ones that are related in some sense to the genocide. So it doesn't affect any investments outside of the companies that are still doing business in Sudan. It's just those companies, and it couldn't be interpreted in a way that would broaden the investment prohibition aspect to other situations around the world or other social things like abortion or things like that.
Follow up?
Yes.
So just for getting this all on the record, then, you see the intent and the language of this bill as not allowing administratively a broadening of this to other situations without coming back to the legislature for specific legislation?
Yes, Representative Seaton. In our bill, the list of companies are called scrutinized companies. That's that's defined as the Sudanese companies on page 5 of the bill. But you're right. You're absolutely right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to, with each sponsor of this, get this on the record so that as things progress forward, there's no doubt that the bill that we would pass now does not authorize future people to come and pressure the administration to expand this to another situation without coming back to the legislature and getting another bill. And that's I'm not meaning to be contentious.
When we get to the place where you might be having amendments to any of these bills, you might wish to put some kind of an amendment in that states this bill pertains to one nation only. You know, any other nation, we'd have to come back. Just put something that specifically addresses that issue. It would make you more comfortable.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's more a comment. I don't have a question, but in going through some of the pages in this super thick document, there's a fund operated by Roosevelt Investment Group, and the name of the fund is the Bull Moose Fund, Roosevelt Bull Moose. And so it got my attention and says, this fund was created to be free of terrorist sponsoring countries, of which Sudan is one. So this fund gets to the heart of the matter without singling out, without complications. There is one problem. The entire capitalization is only $10 million. But they did all the work. I was surprised that you could invest in a fund that did that much work. And I'm not going to plug them, but I will say they're earning money like crazy. And more than the S&P, I don't give numbers, but they're doing pretty darn well. And they're dedicated to free of terrorist sponsoring companies. Here we are working. We're not talking about Cambodia, which in the numbers of people that were killed in Cambodia far exceed what we're talking about here. So we've selected one place, one country, one time in history, and said, we're getting out. And I'm not sure that's the philosophy we have. It's the philosophy, let's not support terrorism. Maybe that, I think that's our philosophy. And we're doing a little thing about it in one place at one time, rather than worrying about the planet's terrorism. Very difficult chore, impossible within government. But some people are working on it, and that's why we have all these documents from divestment, all the work they did on just divestment in Darfur. don't know that anybody could do what we're asking to do, and that's free the world of terrorism. But do we want to free half the world of terrorism, 80% of the world of terrorism, not invest in companies in 80% of the world that are terrorist organizations? To me, it's an overwhelming objective that I don't think is achievable. I support the concept. I like the idea. I just wonder that we're kind of running down a rabbit trail, and there are so many rabbit trails, and I'm not sure there's a rabbit down our trail. Is there an answer to, well, we only want to make a point that we're willing to do this, or are we really trying to accomplish something on a global basis? I guess I did have a question, and that's the question.
Thanks. Through the chair, Rep. Delgado, I understand it. It's overwhelming when you think of the other problems that there are in the world. But I guess I would invite you over the next few months maybe to spend some time maybe going to see a film on the Darfur genocide or witness some materials on the Darfur genocide. And I think they will tell you that the other evils of the world aside, it's appropriate to do something about this one. And I think you'll have to recognize that by doing something about this one, you're not doing anything about Iran or the other things that would also bother you. But this one is, if you're going to rank the things in the world that are worthy of acting on, this is at least tied for first.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Garrett, yes.
Well, just to add a little something to the, Mr. Chairman, to add a little something to what Representative from downtown said, it was a historic occasion that the U.S. Congress and the President had declared this a genocide that had never happened before, that actually why a genocide was occurring, that we had declared that this was going to be a genocide. And so it's sort of a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing so far. And so I think that makes it a unique situation. And also, earlier, Representative Gatto had asked, how are we ever going to know if the genocide ends? There is a provision in HB 45 on page 6, line 24, that says the United States Congress or the President of the United States will declare that the genocide has ended. And so there is a section in here, and so that's when we will know that. We will be notified that the genocide has ended.
Now, I think it is unique that we have now two presidents of opposite parties plus the Congress who call this a genocide.
Correct.
I'd like to thank Representative Garrett for bringing the bill forward and for his work last year. He's been a real foot soldier in this fight to do something about the genocide. We realize that this or any other bill is not going to stop all the terrors, horrific things that are happening around the world, but we do what we can do. That's all we can do. And he's been a tremendous asset to this, and he's been a real foot soldier in this entire effort, and I want to thank you for it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I just want to thank you, Representative Lynn, for all your work and your staff's work on this. It's been a joint effort.
Thank you. Now we're going to bring the governor's people forward, and
these are for questions only.
Okay. Who's going to lead off on this? Okay. I'd like to welcome Patrick Galvin and Jerry Burnett to the House State Affairs Committee, your first time for us this year or
yes.
In this session. The legislature probably won't be the last, at least not for this bill. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Patrick Galvin. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. With me is Jerry Burnett, the Deputy Commissioner for the Treasury. And we are pleased to be here to discuss with the sponsors of the bills that have been previously discussed this morning our joint effort to oppose the activities of the government of Sudan in the Darfur region. And as was just recently pointed out, this is an unprecedented situation where we have recognized genocide being labeled as such as it is happening by the government of the United States and by the United Nations. And we believe, and the governor believes very strongly, that that situation provides us with a moral imperative to act. And one way that we can act that has been identified and has been pursued by many other entities and many other states and the federal government as well is to divest our funds from businesses that are doing activities that are supportive of these genocide activities. And so the governor and this administration support the efforts that are contained in these bills to take the steps necessary to divest. We testified last year in the other body on a similar bill last session. At the time, our testimony was in support of the purpose of the bill, which is to divest. At the time, we pointed out that we had some concerns about the mechanism that was being put in place. We wanted to be able to achieve the goal and to maximize that result while also minimizing costs and unintended consequences. With that in mind, we have crafted the bill that is now before you as House Bill 92, which is specifically designed to do just that, to achieve the maximization of the goal to actually achieve the divestiture of the state's funds from companies that are doing that activity while also minimizing costs. And you'll note that the fiscal note for House Bill 92 is a zero fiscal note. We have achieved what was our intent, was to do what we believe is appropriate in this case, which is to build the directive that you're giving to us in such a way that the implementation of it is something that's done through our compliance side of Department of Revenue, through the accounting mechanism, as opposed to through the investment side, where we actually would burden our investment managers with this task. We believe we can achieve the same result through a much more streamlined mechanism that we'll describe for you today that is basically achieving the same result but doing so in a much less costly manner. I want to point out that we support the bill for one particular reason, which is that the administration in consultation with Department of Law has found that we do not have the discretion to implement a divestiture policy alone. Under the current rules, statutes that govern both my authority on the funds that I am responsible for as the primary fiduciary, also those that are managed by the ARM board or by the permanent fund, the statutory requirements for being a prudent investor would restrict those boards and myself from implementing this type of a policy and being protected from basically the potential for somebody claiming that we've lost investment revenue as a result of instituting something that was looking beyond just the economic benefit from an investment. And so we need the legislation that you see here in order to implement this policy. And that also provides the assurance that Representative Seaton has indicated that he's looking for, that the language of the bill is quite explicit, that it is limited to the situation in Sudan, limited to the specifically defined types of companies that are doing the activities that we want to avoid investing in, and that it does not provide any sort of a gateway for other issues to be basically used as an investment decision-making process in the future. It is isolated to the Darfur situation and cannot be used for any other purpose, and the administration or the ARM board of the permanent fund would not be able to use it for that purpose. Also, just following up on a couple of the questions that have been raised to the previous speakers. Going to the question that came up with regard to weapons manufacturers or those that might be supplying weapons, you'll note that in House Bill 92, the actual description of the companies is found at the bottom of page 2, line 28, that it's basically the companies that conduct or have direct investments in business operations in Sudan. And so that business operations in Sudan is the controlling term. And when you turn to page 3 at the bottom again, the definition of business operation means power production activities, mineral extraction activities, oil-related activities, or production of military equipment. And the production of military equipment is further defined, again, at the bottom of the next page, we just hit the bottom of each page, as means weapons, arms, military supplies, equipment. So that one is explicitly covered in our bill. In addition, the question with regard to, I think, the timing issue in terms of when does this end? when are we considered to have been able to say that we've achieved the result and can lift this requirement? You'll note that there's a repeal of the statute on page 6, beginning on line 18, and there's two different situations which would result in the repeal of this, both of which rely upon actions by the President and or Congress to actually recognize that the situation in Darfur has changed and that it's no longer one that requires this type of a policy. And I think the other thing that I wanted to note has to do with the timing of how the list gets generated and sort of the mechanism that we're putting in place here. What we propose is that that myself as Commissioner of Revenue would take the responsibility to generate the list for the state, and that list would be comprehensive. It would not just be a list of those companies that fall into this category that we have current investments in. It would just be a list of the companies that we are not going to allow investments in, and that list would be generated initially by December 31st and then renewed every year on December 31st. The process by which that list is generated is one that allows for a certain amount of due process for the companies that are being basically stigmatized with this label, because it is our intent that one of the purposes of this act is to stigmatize these companies and to publicly call them out for their activities. And so we want to ensure that we do not do so improperly. And so there's an opportunity, there's notice given to the company that they're going to be put on this list, and they're given 90 days to provide us with information to basically convince us that they should not be put on this list. And then at the end of that time frame, then the decision would be made whether to put them on the list. And if they are put on that list, then that information is provided then to our and I'll have Jerry talk in detail about this, but we can actually build this into our daily monitoring of the investments that the state has. And I believe the permanent fund would be able to exercise a similar is a contractual thing that we have through our custodians of the money accounts, that they would monitor it and provide us with the compliance reports on a regular basis, and we can actually manage that on a regular, actually a very regular basis, as opposed to the quarterly that's indicated in the other bills. This would be almost a daily activity where we would see if a company is popping up on any of the funds that we manage. As was indicated by a previous speaker, I think it's accepted amongst all of the bill sponsors that the targets for the divestiture policy are those funds that the state fully controls. And that is an important distinction within our investment portfolio, because there are certain funds, if we are investing in what's generally referred to as an index fund, where we're trying to match a particular index, then we are basically handing over the types of companies that are going to be in that to those that would match the index. And we're not able to specifically identify companies and say these are going to be excluded if we're the whole purpose is to match the index. Similarly, if we're in what's referred to as a commingled fund or co-managed fund, where there are other owners besides the state in that fund, we don't have the contractual right to direct where the investments are going to be. And so it would only be those funds that we solely have responsibility for that we can direct our manager to take certain steps to divest or not to invest in particular companies. And this would go to even some of the investment options that are provided for the DC programs and other similar type situations where we are providing a particular fund. If it's where the state is solely managing that fund, then we will have the opportunity to tell the manager that we do not want them to have funds in these particular companies, and they would comply with that. The reference has been made to the size of the impact, and we do have some proxies that we can use to kind of gauge that a little bit. There are, obviously, as has been discussed, there are a number of entities that have already taken on this task and have generated lists that they've implemented through their investment system. And as you would expect, there is a small group of companies that provided the service of identifying these companies and providing similar lists. And so we can use that as a starting point to reflect back on our current investments within the ARM board, in particular, PERS-TER system, and see if we use that filter, what would pop up. And running that through as of the end of the previous month, which was the end of the calendar year, 12/31, there's roughly about a little over $3.5 million that we're talking about, which is, in the grand scheme of things, an extremely small percentage, like 1/100 of 1%. And so it is something that we feel, although that may be a small number, we feel that the both the message, the purpose, and, as I said, the stigmatizing of the companies is an important function for the state to have as well. And so we're not focused just on the actual dollar amount, but I just wanted to point that out in terms of getting a sense of scale in terms of the impact that it may have. And then finally, before I end, there have been some comments made with regard to the permanent fund, the permanent fund's position on this. And I just, as a trustee of the permanent fund, I want to state my appreciation for Mr. Burns and his position on this. He has been put in a difficult position because he cannot change the policy of the board. He's the executive director of the board working on behalf of the trustees. The trustees' position has always been to avoid this type of social investment policy, and so he was carrying that out. And his concern has always been with regard to unintended consequences and costs, and I appreciate that position. And I think that his efforts on this have been in keeping with the policy of the Permanent Fund Corporation. That said, I also feel that with the structure of HB 92 and that balancing of the basically no real cost to it versus fulfilling the objective and, as I said, the moral imperative associated with this, I believe that the trustees would likely support it, and that will be something that will probably come up at a future board meeting. So I don't know if, Jerry, if you wanted to add anything.
Yeah. For the record, Jerry Burnett, the Deputy Commissioner for Treasury in the Department. As Commissioner Galvin said, we would look at this as a compliance issue, and our custodial bank is State Street Bank. They have a contractor that they have on contract right now, Risk Metrics, and they produce these lists for other states, and that would be our starting point, would be the list that Risk Metrics produces for them. Then we would, of course, we would send letters to everybody because of the due process and give them 90 days to respond and complete the official prohibited investment list after the opportunity for a response. Now, that list, as Commissioner Galvin said, will then apply to the ARM board, the Commissioner of Revenue, and the permanent fund. It'll be one single list. Representative Seaton asked earlier about, I think when in Representative Guerra's bill, about those DC plans and SBS plans. And we have DC plans which are unique to the state of Alaska, which are investment options. Those investment options, we would direct our managers not to invest. We would have the authority to direct our managers not to invest. For those that are commingled with other investors, they're like a mutual fund type where the state is taking advantage of a fund, then we would notify the managers of our list, who's on the list, and ask them to divest, but we would have no authority to direct divestment. So that's how that would be handled, and we can identify which of the funds are ours and which ones are joint for you.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, and on that point, I'd just like to, you know, get some clarity there. So something like the Alaska Target 2025 Trust or Alaska Target 20 or Alaska Long-Term Balance Funds, would those be examples of those that where we control the investments?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'd have to get back to you on those because those may be made up of components, which are a mix of components that we can't control. We may have control over some part of them and not control over other parts of them.
Okay, follow up. And so something like Brandeis International, which is not an index, but is actually it's a large managed fund of which we're a small part of that equity fund, that would be an example of one where we might send a letter to them saying that this is our position, but it wouldn't necessarily kick that manager off of the list if they did not divest whatever their scenario is. Is that correct?
That's correct, although I don't want to maybe accept the initial premise, which is that particular fund is in one category or the other. And the reason is that although there are funds that are of a brand name, Brandeis International, the nature of our relationship with them may be such that we have a separate account within their fund. And so I just don't want to provide any misinformation, but if that is one where we have basically joined in as just one investor in a pool of investors in that particular fund, then it would be one, as Jerry said, that we would be providing them notice and asking them to divest. If it's one where we have a contractual relationship that would provide us with the opportunity to direct them, then we would be directing them.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Could I ask that the department, when it comes back for the further hearing, that we have a listing of the funds? I mean, I presume that we can go in, if we're going to do it later, we can go in now and say what's the characteristic of those funds so we know we know what we're talking about in those.
Yes, Representative Seaton, we're looking back at the folks who actually know this stuff at the comptroller back behind us, and I think we've been given the nod that we can.
We'll look at it.
Yeah, we'll pull something together. The question is just the breadth and the level of complexity that we understand that you're looking for or not looking for, and we'll provide you with something that will provide an answer to your question.
We have a zero fiscal note, excuse me, on the governor's bill. Could you help us understand why we have a zero fiscal note? And I believe, you know, my bill doesn't, and Representative Garrett's bill doesn't. What is it that made the difference, other than you guys being in the administration?
But it goes primarily to that question of passive, commingled, and then the nature of the reporting. Our design is to try to make it, as we've both indicated, something that would fall into our compliance shop, as opposed to something that's going to fall out and become a burden on other parts of our operation. And then the issue with the commingled, that if we were put in a position where we would have to actually pull out of investment vehicles simply to be able to provide us with the control necessary to implement this policy, then that would have a cost. And so those are both recognized in the other fiscal notes. But I don't know if Jerry wanted to add anything.
I think the only thing I would add, this is Jerry Burnett, is that we have an ongoing compliance function, which we get reports through our custodial bank on a regular basis, and we would be adding this to that. We're not intending to put more people on it. We're not, just looking at one more thing. Whereas now we're maybe looking at how much cash the manager holds or if the asset allocation is correct, we'd just have one more thing to look at in that.
Have you fellows had a chance to look at my bill and Representative Guerra's bill, see if there's anything in there that you might wish to incorporate into the governor's bill?
Mr. Chair, we have incorporated those. You'll note there are a lot of similarities between the bills. What we basically did, and I think as has been recognized, your bill came out of a sort of model bill that's been moved around and shopped to different jurisdictions. And it is a fine vehicle, but it didn't meet our needs. And so we took the parts of it that provided, as I said, to maximize the intent of providing the divestiture while also building an infrastructure underneath it that meets the structure of the state's investment situation so that we can do so in the least costly manner. And so we believe that we have taken and used most of the bill's intent and actual language in many instances.
It's my intent that we do what we can in Alaska to stop the divestment and to divest what we can in Darfur, to do what little bit we can, maybe to address the genocidal situation over there. It doesn't matter whether it's your bill, our bill, Representative Guerra's bill, to take appropriate action. I'm very happy that this has developed the way it had. Very happy with the governor's interest in this bill and her working to do something about it, as she mentioned on several occasions.
I think that
Representative Wilson, were you next?
Yeah. I don't know.
I think she was.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two different questions I would like to ask, if that's okay. First of all, the comparison that you put in was really helpful to me. So the highlighted areas are the differences, I think. And it's almost at the end of our packet, but that really made a difference for me.
I would invite everybody to look at it. It's the end of the packet. It's very instructive.
Yeah. Two questions. Number one, the list that you get, do you have to pay for that list? I mean, the list that's already made from somebody else, do they give that freely to everyone, or do you guys have to pay for that a little bit? That's the first question.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I'm not sure exactly what the cost structure will be and how that would be incorporated. at this point. Okay. But it's not going to increase the total cost of our compliance efforts. Okay.
But, and let me just clarify. It is not, as you'll see when you look at the structure of the bill, the list is a list that will be generated by the Commissioner of Revenue, and we will use other lists from other entities as a guide. Now, as Jerry said, the one that's currently being produced by this risk metrics is one that would be a starting point for us to use. Similarly, others that are being generated by other entities that are engaged in this would be looked at as well. And I just don't want to give the impression that we're going to just buy into some list and that will become the state's list. No, that's not the case. That will just be used as a guide.
All right, thank you. And then the second question is on the legislative research report dated January 27th, 2009. Do you have that?
We have it. Yeah, I have one dated the 23rd, but it may be the same. I think it's the same one because you made a reference earlier that matched up.
Oh. So. Well, on the last page, under footnote number 7 and number 8, there were some concerns with the permanent fund, just some concerns that they had. Does your bill take care of those concerns?
We believe it does. And you'll note that actually in both of them, they also reference Gary Bader, who is the chief investment officer for the Treasury, and he had similar concerns. And it goes back to this issue of the commingled funds and the passive funds and whether or not the bill was going to require those to be basically pulled out of those entire funds. And we have addressed that in our bill.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question as to the implementation date. If this bill does pass, it mentions in here that a couple of times on or before January 31st of each year or should be updated before December 31st. If this bill passes, obviously it's going to be passed January 31st before it happens. And so I would not, and if it does pass, I would like to see it implemented as soon as possible. So would those dates be changed, depending on when it does pass? Or
Representative Peterson, as you noted, the bill says on or before this date and then on an annual basis. It would be our intent to implement it as soon as possible after the effective date of the bill. Now, as said earlier, that would require generating the list and then providing notice to the companies and then 90 days going by. So it's not going to be immediate, but it would be as soon as possible.
Okay.
Very good. Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just start out. I'm trying to get to a question on page 4, but you won't have to even turn anything. In the title, it refers to, on line 3, business in Sudan. Then I go to page 2 on line 28. It says, a list of companies that conduct or have direct investments in business operations in Sudan. And the word direct investments, which excludes non-direct investments, everything except direct investments. And I have trouble with that definition. Then we'll go to page 3. Line 29, it says business operations. It tells us exactly what we mean. Power production, mineral extraction, oil, military equipment. And on page 4, we get to at the very top, B, does not include. So we're getting some pretty good definitions here for Sudan. However, I go now down on page 4, and this is where you do have to go with me, to line 18, where we have a definition. The government of Sudan means the government in Khartoum. Doesn't mean the government anywhere else. It means the government in Khartoum, led by the National Congress Party, formerly known as the National Islamic Front, and any successor government formed on or after. That's a lot of parts to what we mean by the government. And then that's A. B includes the Coalition National Unity Government. And then C is the part that really gets me. C does not include the regional government of Southern Sudan. And I'm not sure I know what Southern Sudan is, but I know it's different than Northern Sudan, which means we now have taken the Sudan, defined it as must meet a series of tests. Furthermore, it must avoid Southern Sudan. And now we have business investments that meet a certain level and business investments that are not required to meet that level. This is sounding difficult to grab hold of and say, I know what we want to do, but I'm reading language, and I'm not sure the language is going to let us proceed in an uncomplicated way to simply say, let's not do business in Sudan because of all these tests that have to be satisfied to figure out what Sudan is.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, I guess as a lawyer, what I'd have to tell you is that the precision of the definition that you just described is actually what makes it implementable. If it simply left it to government of Sudan or invested in Sudan, that would leave it subject to an infinite number of potential interpretations. If somebody were, for example, just doing business with the folks who are actually supportive of the Darfur region, not the ones who are oppressing them, that is a government within Sudan. And we, within the structure of it, could be in a position where we would be violating the terms of the specific terms of the act by not divesting from a company that's actually in there as in a helpful capacity to provide, you know, the infrastructure that's needed for that region. And so the language that's used, it comes from the I guess taking a step back, we're in this policy implementing, as I stated at the beginning, what has been recognized by the United Nations and Congress as genocide activities. Within those recognitions, they have specifically identified what they consider to be the genocide activities, and they have targeted these defined entities. And so we are merely trying to continue that specificity in terms of who we are targeting as the ones that we're trying to choke off from any help. And so it is through that precision that we're able to actually come up with a list that specifically targets the activities that we're trying to choke off.
A follow-up.
Here we go.
And I guess that was part of the question, and I think we're on the same track. I feel like we have a big target and a little bullseye. And by the time we go through the definitions, we've stripped away an awful lot of rings, and we're at the bullseye now. And you have to hit the bullseye only to hit the target. And so we've made it a difficult target, I think. But maybe I don't know enough about investing. A difficult target to hit and accomplish a result that we're after, which is to divest from organizations that do business in a certain part of the bullseye and accomplish the result of ending genocide. It's a high hurdle, a big high bar for me. Well, to see how we'll get there.
Representative Gatto, I guess the analogy I would use would be one, rather than one of a bullseye and trying to make the target smaller and making our task more difficult, instead one of cancer. There's a cancer in Sudan. It's not the entire country, but there's a cancerous portion of Sudan. And what we don't want to do is we don't want to go in with basically a chainsaw as our tool for trying to remove that cancer and end up damaging the entire area that we're trying to protect in the process. We're trying to avoid unintended consequences of this policy, and we're doing so in a surgical way. And to be that precise, you need fairly precise language.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And along those same lines of precise language, when you define, you know, you say, excuse me, a business means power production, production of military equipment, and then you define military equipment on in B on line 5, page 2, is includes radar systems, military grade, et cetera, et cetera, directly to a force actively participating in armed conflict in Sudan. So let me paint a hypothetical that we decide to, Bell Helicopter decides to arm southern Sudan, and they get involved in an armed conflict with the bad guys. Do we have to quit buying, can we not invest in Bell Helicopters because they're involved in an armed conflict in Sudan? So I would suggest that we define Sudan a little more closely. When, if southern Sudan invades northern Sudan or Darfur, that we're not excluded under this from investing in companies, that we're really trying to do the right thing. Our country's very good about selling arms to to insurgents trying to, and so I just want to make sure that we don't have a situation where we're limiting ourselves.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, we believe the bill achieves that result. And although,
could you show me where?
Yeah, and although the language that you identified goes to the definition of military equipment, you have to understand that military equipment is it all goes back to the definition of supportive, the business is supportive of the government of Sudan. And so if you are providing military equipment that is going to southern Sudan, you're specifically excluded from the definition of the government of Sudan, because as it states, it's does not include the regional government of southern Sudan. It would only be military equipment that's being provided to the government of Sudan, which means the government in Khartoum and so on and so forth. And so we believe the structure of the definitions properly target the activity that we're trying to divest from, while not improperly broadening that to a scenario as you described. We believe that we would still be able to invest in Bell Helicopters in the scenario that you just described.
I'd like to clarify that, because business operations, I want to look into it. And when you define business operations, it's doing conflict, you know, involved in armed conflicts. So I want to just, I'd like to look into that, and that's, I'll do that on my own. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
And Mr. Chairman, following up on Representative Johnson's, on page 2 where we have what's being prevented is not, on line 28, is companies that conduct or have direct investments in business operations in Sudan. It doesn't say business operations with the government of Sudan. And so I, you know, later on we talk about the government of Sudan, and I just want to make sure that we are addressing where we prohibit something, we prohibit what we later want to define, and not having unclear.
Mr. Chair, we'll ensure that. We'll make sure that that's the case.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions, you gentlemen? I want to thank you very much for your work you put into this. Looking forward to having you back when we have the next hearing. And between now and then, if you would like to talk to any of the members of the committee or anybody else, you'd be welcome to do that, how we might make this bill even better. So, thank you. We have in the room with us here Mike Byrne, CEO of the Permanent Fund Corporation, and Pam Green, Comptroller, Department of Revenue. I know you've for questions only, but would you have any comments you'd care to add, or maybe wait till next time?
I saw that.
Thank you very much.
Pardon me. For the record, I'm Mike Burns, and Executive Director and CEO of the Permanent Fund Corporation. As Commissioner Galvin said, the board's longstanding position has been against social investing. We do have a meeting coming up on the 18th and 19th of February that this will be discussed. I've had various conversations with some of the trustees, and I guess I would like to just lay out a few comments about the bills to get, I think, the general direction of where we're going. I think the first area that is important to absolutely get as a backdrop is, you know, this is your policy, and whatever policy, you know, we will follow it. The concept that has always bothered us about social investing has always been, and we talked about it at great length last year, was the slippery slope. In my opinion, all of these bills definitionally and geographically put as tight a fence around this issue as you can. And I think also the questions that Representative Seaton has put forth to make sure that the legislative intent is exactly, you know, what the bill says, I think, you know, tightens that fence. So as best as you can, you know, unslippery the slippery slope, I think this bill does as good a job as you can, as I said, definitionally and geographically. The second issue is the issue about index funds and commingled funds, and I think those are addressed, you know, that, you know, it would be expensive for us and very awkward for us to try to control those processes. Actually, just this morning, I thought of a third issue that I think we may want to look at to add into that definition, and that would be the exchange-traded funds, which are a very small type of index fund, but they're very focused. I mean, you can get an exchange-traded fund that is a basket of nothing but biogenetic stocks. You can get ones that are nothing but emerging markets from the Middle East. You can, you know, there's an exchange-traded fund that are baskets of specialized stocks. And when you buy those, you buy the basket. You don't buy individuals in there. So I think that may be worth looking into that, and I had not thought of that until this morning. I think the most important issue for us is the structure of how the commissioner would come forth with this list, and then it would be our responsibility to monitor whether our investments comply with the list. We really don't want to be in the list business. We're busy enough trying to make the right investments, and you know, if you know, and we have investment guidelines for a lot of things. You know, when types of debt we can buy, what kind of ratings, things of that nature. So, I think anything that takes us out of the list business or the list preparation business is very, very helpful to us because it gives us a clear set of directions. So, again, you know, the board doesn't meet till the middle of the month, but I think these are concepts that I think we will be talking about. And I guess at this point, just leaving those are my opinion on them right now.
Would you recommend that we not hear the bill again after the board meets, or would it be appropriate to meet before then? Because at the next meeting, I'd like to take action on the bill, either to pass it out or not to pass it out.
I guess the commissioner's gone.
Or if you'd like to get back with us after this
Let us talk
meeting about
it. I think we ought to talk about that.
Because I want to move the bill or not move it, you know, as rapidly as possible.
Yeah.
But you know, necessary. It's a very important subject. It's necessary for us all to be on the same page and to work together on this.
Mr. Chair, I guess I do not feel that this committee needs to wait until the permanent fund board meets again.
Okay.
I think that the issues that would arise because of that are, you know, would be something that could be taken up in the finance committee if necessary. I don't think it's going to be really an issue, and so I don't think that this body, this committee, needs to wait.
Would you, working with Mr. Burns, want to try to put together any amendment to the bill as it stands for our consideration, for us to look at and maybe offer?
I guess just on this issue of...
On any part of it.
We will discuss it, and if we have something that we would bring forward to you at your next committee hearing.
And the same thing to other members of the committee. If you think some amendments to this bill, it would be appropriate to please let us know as soon as we can, and we'll consider those. Representative Wilson, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had, I guess I wanted to ask the question here on the footnote on page 8 where it said the Alaska Department of Revenue, Gary Bader, Chief Investment Officer of the Alaska Department of Revenue, expressed his belief that the Alaska funds would likely perform substantially worse after divestment. Do you want to make a comment on that?
You know, that's the first I've seen that comment.
It's at the end of footnote 8.
Representative Wilson, through the chair. Just as I noted earlier, Gary Bader works for me. He's the chief investment officer for the Treasury. And as I referenced earlier, I believe what he was referring to was that the structure of the bill that was introduced last year dealt with requiring the state to basically pull out of a number of our co-managed funds and potentially our index funds, and that in and of itself would result in a potential loss of investment revenue. And that's what he was referring to, I believe, in that context. And
so he was referring to last year's bill.
Last year's bill.
Not the bill here today.
Not the governor's bill that we talked, because that's, as I discussed earlier, we and just so you know, Gary was a principal architect of HB 92 in terms of its structure. And so it's designed to avoid the concerns that he raised last year. And now, just to note, those I'm not sure where those comments are from. I think that was from personal conversations that a staffer had with Gary, so they're not on the record. They're just observations. But I do want to make it clear on the record that the current bill is intended to and Mr. Chair, I assume that when you talk about amendments to this bill, your reference is to 92?
To the governor's bill.
Okay. That bill addresses those concerns.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Peterson?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned just a minute ago, Mr. Burns, about the exchange-traded funds.
Right.
And so you think that should be added to the list of other mutual-type funds that you have no control over the management of? That is that what you're referring to?
Through the chair, Representative, we need to talk about that, but it just, as we were talking through this or listening this morning, I don't think it's specifically referenced there, and I think we'd like to come back to you on that.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd just like to say that I'm much more comfortable with the not relying on somebody else's list and tying us. We can use those as models or for a starting, but giving these companies the due process considerations and all, I'm much more comfortable with the process of the Commissioner of Revenue establishing this. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that there is a significant difference in the bills based on taking somebody else's list or developing our own with due process considerations. And thank you for that.
Okay. Any other questions for our gentleman here? Well, I'd like to thank you very, very much. I'd like to thank everybody who's participated in the initial hearings on all three of the bills this morning. I'm very encouraged by what I've been hearing. And you can be assured that we will hear the governor's bill as rapidly as possible, and we can work together to try to get this out the door. And with that, if no other question, I'd like to thank you again. And for a final comment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to also thank you for bringing this issue forward and for the hearing this morning. It's an issue that both the governor and her entire administration feel strongly about, and we are very pleased to see these bills being acted on. And I also want to just express, if any of your committee members have any questions, we're happy to talk in detail about any of the aspects of the bill.
Thank you very much. Any other business to come before the committee this morning? Our next meeting we'll be considering HB 42, which is the instant online reporting bill, and we'll get some information to you on that. I did have an op-ed in the newspaper about that. You might read it. It's an overall view of it. And so with that, if you know that business come before us, I adjourn the meeting at